Support for programming comes from Bluestem Books, offering more than 50,000 used, rare, and out-of-print books. Located at 137 South 9th Street, online at bluestembooks.com, and now on Facebook. Bluestem Books, preserving the printed word for over 25 years.
Good morning and welcome to Friday Live here on NET Radio, live from the mill in Lincoln's Haymarket. I'm Genevieve Randall. Thanks to Fuse Coworking for providing our Wi-Fi hookup. Today's program features at least four concerts, as well as a Ross film review, a multimedia show about a crane in Kearney, and the next Celtica Spiritus event in Lincoln. Just ahead, I'll also talk with author Steve Morantz about his book, The Rhythm Boys of Omaha Central, and a collision of politics and state basketball in 1968. We start this morning with two composers, and we'll talk about some choreography going on and world premieres at the next Nebraska Chamber Players performance, which is tonight in Lincoln and Sunday in Alma, with a premiere of a new work by someone sitting right here at the table. Joining me are composer Jim DeMars, who also teaches at Arizona State University, and Joe Holmquist, NCP percussionist and composer. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning to you.
Now, Jim DeMars, I know in your music, you like to explore kind of cross-cultural sounds. Is there some of that in the piece on this program, which is called Tarot?
Yes, very much so. Tarot, the main thing is the instrumentation. We have Becky will be playing the Native American flute on this one, and blending that with a lot of imagery from the tarot cards, and sort of a tarot reading, if you will. And she will be herself reading and playing the flute, and they'll be blending it within the ensemble.
Now, Native American flute, typically, when you talk to someone about how to play an actual Native American flute, it's very free-form, kind of an improvisatory. How do you capture that in written music?
Well, if you could play the flute and make it sound like a recorder, it's not so much the instrument as the nature in which it's played. So the task for the players here is to remain relatively free with the music, and so they move from improvisation into some very tight, specific music and back into improvisation, and it's up to the audience to see if they know which is which, I guess.
Now, as the piece moves along, you mentioned that it's called Tarot, yes, and that it's kind of like we're having several drawings of the cards.
Yes.
What cultural tradition does that come out of?
Well, that's actually from my tradition. I was traveling, I was in France, my heritage is French, and I realized that it was time to work with some of the things from the past there, and there's a rich history of the tarot cards and so forth there. So the first deck I had, of course, was a French deck, but I like the idea that it was fundamental. It's been a cultural element in Western culture for a long time. So in one sense, they don't fit together, but in the sense that my whole life I've been writing for a mixture of instruments, it was fit for me, I guess.
Absolutely. Now we have another composer at the table. Who is Tristan Fuentes?
Tristan Fuentes is my pen name, and the reason this happened was in the 80s and 90s, I was playing with a group called Zeitgeist, a Minneapolis-St. Paul-based group, and these people, the players, put a lot of time into my music, and a way of kind of keeping peace with everybody was if I didn't put my name on it. So I just invented this moniker, Tristan Fuentes, to put on my pieces. But now I moved to Lincoln in 2000, and here there's no need for such a gesture. So now I don't try to cover up the fact, you know, that I'm Tristan Fuentes.
And for listeners, this is the voice of Joe Holmquist that you're hearing. So Tristan Fuentes, a pen name for Joe Holmquist. And this is the first time that your piece Pelican Frolics will be performed. I like the name. Did you know that the white pelicans are currently migrating through Nebraska?
Yes, very much aware.
So
of
is
that.
There a connection?
Yeah.
Was this the actual inspiration for the piece? Or
I was approached by Pat Underwood, out of Harlan Tourism Bureau. Sorry if I'm not getting that name right, Pat. But she said, Joe, I'd like you to write a piece. And that was the genesis of the whole thing.
And I hear there's choreography.
Yeah, Susan Levine Orida is she's a UNL dance professor, and she's got a dance troupe of, I think, five dancers that are doing their thing. It's pretty cool.
And there's another piece on the program by Darius Mio. We don't want to forget to mention that will be performed. I heard about this particular piece, that Mio had been to the United States and heard early African-American jazz and then went back to France and wrote this. Do you think that influence is obvious in the piece? Is it a subtle influence?
It's pretty obvious. I think when people listen to it, some people will get connections to Gershwin. I think the piece comes from about 1923. So I don't know if Mio knew about Gershwin or if there was any direct connection, but certainly you can hear elements of, you'd call it early jazz. Mm-hmm.
So these are the three pieces that we'll be hearing on the next Nebraska Chamber Players program. And I have one more question for you, since I have two composers at the table. You know, chamber groups can't often ask so many composers questions directly. There isn't that intimate interaction with the composer themselves. From the composer side, what is that like to have that immediacy with an ensemble playing your work?
Nebraska Chamber Players is a great ensemble, and I'm seeing more and more of what they do. And I would say one of the most pleasant ensembles I've ever worked with. You never know. You walk into a situation, and will people work with you? And this group's tremendous. So there's a nice give and take. We made lots of changes, made a lot of adjustments.
I would say they're very flexible. They're such strong players that they can make changes, last-minute changes, entertain, you know, different options. I think if the players were less capable, they would be more uptight. But these players are so good, just wonderful, really good.
I've been speaking with composers Jim DeMars and Joe Holmquist. The next Nebraska Chamber Players concert, featuring Tarot by Jim DeMars and Pelican Frolics by Tristan Fuentes, will be tonight at NET in Lincoln and Sunday at the Johnson Center in Alma. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
It's nice to chat with you. Still ahead, we'll talk with poet and peacemaker John Philip Newell, who is in town with Celtica Spiritus, and Sophia Potter of the Rangbrook Ensemble is embarking on a tour of several Nebraska towns. That's all coming up here on NET Radio's Friday Live. March 6th through 8th this year were the Girls State Basketball Championships, March 13th through 15th for the boys. High school athletes from across the state added to the history of their schools. A different kind of history was made during state basketball tournaments in 1968. Omaha author Steve Marantz details the events in his book, The Rhythm Boys of Omaha Central, High School Basketball at the 68 Racial Divide. He was in Omaha on March 20th as part of a panel discussion and recently gave a talk at the Durham Museum in Omaha. He's here to talk with me now, Steve Marantz. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Jen. Nice to be here.
Who are the Rhythm Boys?
The Rhythm Boys was a nickname given to the Omaha Central High basketball team of the 1967-68 season. No one's quite sure where it came from, but we think it was first used in a World Herald story by one of the high school reporters. Students at the school started using it, and players seemed to like it, so it stuck.
And you went to Omaha Central High School?
I was a 1969 graduate. I was a junior, 16 years old, in the season that I wrote about in the book.
What happened politically in 1968 in Omaha?
It was a presidential year, and the third-party candidate, George C. Wallace, the former governor of Alabama, wanted to enter the Nebraska primary. At the time, there were only 13 primaries in the country. Wallace was running a third-party candidacy to try to impose his agenda on both major parties, which was to stop the momentum of desegregation. If he could gain enough electoral votes as a third-party candidate to prevent any one of the major candidates from getting 270 electoral votes, he could then leverage his position to get something.
So on the eve of the state tournaments in Nebraska in 1968, something happens. George Wallace visits Omaha, and what happens next?
Yes. he held a rally at the Civic Auditorium. He needed signatures, I forget how many, to get himself on the primary ballot, and he got those easily. And about 5,000 people showed up to the auditorium. About 4,500 were supporters, 500 were anti-Wallace. As the evening progressed, it became more contentious. It's not quite clear who started what, but by the end of the rally, it was a full-scale riot.
And where do the politics and the civil rights movement then collide with Nebraska State basketball?
Well, the Wallace rally took place two blocks from Central High School. It was incendiary to some of the African-American players on the Central High team. Central High is a school that stressed social conscious and political awareness. Many Central students were there protesting the night of the Wallace rally. Central's best player, and probably the best player in the state that year, was a African-American young man named Dwayne Dillard, 6'7", center, great player. He didn't go into the rally, but he was outside the auditorium that night. And by the way, this was 3 days before the state tournament was set to begin at the auditorium. And Central was the number one ranked team in the state. Everybody expected them to win the state championship. Dwayne Dillard was predicted to have a great career in college, and probably people thought the pros, and no one foresaw what then happened. What happened was that when the riot at the Wallace rally spilled out of the auditorium, it rolled up 20th Street and 24th Street up into North Omaha. Businesses were set on fire. There were many arrests. The next night after Wallace had left town, one of the people arrested was Dwayne Dillard, Central's top basketball player. It happened late at night. He was in a car with five other black men, and they had firebombs in the car. He spent Tuesday night in a jail cell in downtown Omaha. It became national news. The New York Times, it was on Walter Cronkite, ABC Huntley Brinkley. The best high school basketball player is arrested for protesting George Wallace's presence in the state of Nebraska. It was a national news. And at Central High, I can tell you as a student, it was devastating news.
Did he play then in the tournament?
Well, he got bailed out. He spent the night in jail. Ernie Chambers came down and helped him get out without bond. There was a disagreement at the higher levels of the school board. Some people favored kicking him off the team, and the coach, Warren Marquis, decided that that wasn't fair until he had due process. Up to that point, he'd only been charged. He felt he wanted to be fair to Dwayne Dillard. What he did, though, was because Dwayne had been out late that night and broken the team training rules, that was worthy of a one-game suspension. They moved the tournament from Omaha to Lincoln because they want to have the tournament at the same building that the Wallace rally had occurred. They moved it for security reasons. When the tournament opened in Lincoln, with much security and the basketball court ringed by police, sitting on the sidelines on the bench next to the coach was Dwayne Dillard.
I'm wondering if the fact that you became a writer and specifically writing about sports, if that was affected by those events.
No question. It was very dramatic to live through. As a senior, I dove into journalism at Central High and was the sports editor of the high school newspaper. And then I went on to the University of Missouri, where they had a very good journalism program. And I always felt, after living through that experience, that sports was a vehicle to report on some of the most important issues in America. People love sports. And if you give them a sports story wrapped in maybe a larger issue, they're more apt to digest it than if you just give them the issue. I found that sports was a nice way of writing about many non-sports things.
Steve Marantz is an Omaha Central graduate and the author of The Rhythm Boys of Omaha Central. He formerly covered sports, government, and politics for the Kansas City Star, Boston Globe, and the Boston Herald. Steve, great to talk with you.
Jen, thank you so much.
I'm Genevieve Randall. This is Friday Live on NET Radio. Reverend Jamie Norwich McLennan is founder of Celticus Spiritus, a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting Celtic culture in all forms. And the next guest on their series is poet, peacemaker, and scholar John Philip Newell, who lectured yesterday in Crete and will be in Lincoln tomorrow and Sunday. Both Jamie Norwich McLennan and John Philip Newell are my guests. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Thanks for being here. Now, John Philip, you appeared at Doane College in Crete as part of the Otis Young Lecture Series. That was yesterday. What was the topic of your lecture yesterday?
It was entitled "The Light at the Center of Every Cell," which is a line from one of Mary Oliver's poems. But I was using it to reflect on the resonances between the insights of Mary Oliver, some of the major themes of the Celtic tradition from which I draw very heavily, that celebrates light at the heart of all life, but also linking that to aspects of new physics, which sees the vibration or light of the first moment in the universe as something continuing to vibrate within all life.
A connection between these concepts and current science? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, that's right.
Oh, interesting. Now, you currently kind of divide your time between Scotland and the United States. What are your activities in both of those places?
Well, when I'm at home in Scotland, I'm free to hide away, and that's where I do my writing, and that's, of course, where family is. And then when I'm out on the road teaching and preaching, leading retreats, giving talks, it tends to be on this side of the Atlantic.
See. You've written many books, and I see the word earth or references to nature in many of the titles. Can you explain why that is?
Yes, that's a great passion of mine in my writing, and I've been very influenced by some of the early Celtic Christian themes. And in the early centuries of Christianity in the Celtic world, there was a great celebration of the sacredness of the earth. So much of what I'm doing is drawing on this ancient treasure and trying to bring it to the earth consciousness of today.
And Jamie, tomorrow there is an event, and also on Sunday. Can you tell us the where and when of those events?
Sure. There are a couple of events tomorrow, actually. The first event is at First United Methodist Church, and we will be focusing on John Philip's book called In the Begin... Now I lost the title of your book, the book on creation. He focuses on the book of Genesis, and he talks about that, how that is reflected in our lives, and we look forward to hearing about that. It's kind of a beginning understanding of what Celtic Christianity is, and we thought that might be helpful as something that undergirds the rest of the work that he does. And then tomorrow evening we're having an interfaith prayer event and an opportunity to experience praying together through chants and movement, and so that will be part of what we will do tomorrow. And then on Sunday we have teamed with a peacemaking workshop. This conversation began a number of years, 3 years ago, I think Martha and I were talking about, and an opportunity to look at the three Abrahamic traditions and how we can be in conversation around peace and earth kinds of conversations. And John Philip will be our headliner for that, and explains how his journey has brought him to this place, and help us begin that conversation in greater depth here in Lincoln.
You know, I think people hear the word peacemaker, and people can go to workshops, but just a little snippet this morning, right now, what is something that anyone can do to be, how does one be a peacemaker?
That's a very important question, because sometimes we get a bit paralyzed by the extent of work and transformation that would be required for the establishing of peace in our world. And I think that it's much more important to say that right now is the moment of peace, at the heart of every moment. So right now, I can turn my attention to your well-being, and I can bring my heart into relationship with your heart in such a way that I ask, how can we be at peace? And it is similarly applied in every relationship of life, whether it is with the creatures, whether it is with the earth, or whether it is with other wisdom traditions or other nations. It's a matter of asking in the moment, how can I serve the deep relationship between us and between all things?
I've been speaking with John Philip Newell, an author, ordained Church of Scotland minister, and in town as part of Celticus Spiritus, which was co-founded by Reverend Jamie Norwich McClellan. Thanks to both of you for talking with me this morning.
Thank you, Genevieve.
Thanks, Genevieve. It's good to be here.
Thank you. Still ahead, winners of the Governor's Arts Awards, a cellist tours Nebraska, and Heather Henson, daughter of the late Jim Henson, tells us about her show in Kearney. That's just ahead, after a Ross film review from Wakietal Dreher, here on NET Radio's Friday Live.
Who knew that Wes Anderson had it in him? The it being the ability to charm with an exotic, mysterious, strange, outlandish adventure encased in an embroidered beaded silk cinematic purse named the Grand Budapest Hotel. The set is like a miniature city, and it's as if Anderson shrunk the audience so we can experience the baubles and trinkets of grand old Europe, especially the expanse of the countryside in all of its majesty. Frame by frame, Anderson delights the senses with visually stunning settings. The film ricochets through time and place to tell the story of Monsieur Gustave, played by Ralph Fiennes, the exact, fun-loving, sensational proprietor of the Grand Budapest Hotel. Monsieur Gustave is a man ahead of his time who the narrator informs us is a glimmer of civilization in the barbaric slaughterhouse we know as humanity. Well, that glimmer avails himself of rich and wealthy female patrons who are smitten with his joie de vivre. An elderly Madame D, played by an unrecognizable Tilda Swinton, kudos to the makeup designers, bequeaths to Monsieur Gustave a valuable painting, and thus begin family squabbles, murder, mayhem, intrigue, and love. Anderson even treats us to a daring prison escape led by Ludwig, played by a bald Harvey Keitel. The story begins in 1985 in Lutz, a fictional town in Eastern Europe. An aging author, played by Tom Wilkerson, writes of his journey to the hotel, and through flashbacks we bounce to 1968, and the author recalls his younger self, played by Jude Law, on a stay at the hotel. Over dinner, the author learns of Monsieur Gustave by listening to the story of the hotel's history and its proprietor from Mr. Mustafa, played by F. Murray Abraham. From that dinner table, Anderson ricochets to 1930, to a cold, dark, and damp Central Europe in between two world wars. Anderson portrays this time and space well as he captures via Monsieur Gustave a national tension and disquietude, a kind of controlled panic or a hunger to gorge on life because the joie de vivre could be decimated at a moment's notice. We expect, now how shall I say this? We expect divine performances from Swinton, Fiennes, Keitel, Abraham, and Law. That's a given, really. But Tony Revolori pulses through with a fine performance as Zero, the young Monsieur Mustafa as the lobby boy.
Why do you want to be a lobby boy?
Who wouldn't? At the Grand Budapest, sir.
And so my life began.
In the end, it is he who inherits the painting as well as the Grand Budapest Hotel and all of its grand history. The Grand Budapest Hotel is a must-see. You will enjoy every fantastical moment. The Grand Budapest Hotel plays through April 24th at the Ross Media Arts Center in Lincoln. Also at the Ross, Elaine Stritch, Shoot Me, a documentary homage to the Broadway legend who is still going at 80-plus years old. For Friday Live, I am Waquetal Dreher.
This is Friday Live, broadcasting from the mill in Lincoln's Haymarket. I'm Genevieve Randall. Be sure to check out the arts calendar on our website, both to make plans and to add your event. The address is netnebraska.org/radio. Just click events. Here are some highlights. The Beatrice Community Players condense 100 years of Hollywood's greatest films into 2 hours of comic action. Completely Hollywood shows tonight through April 6th at 412 Ella Street in Beatrice. The comedic documentary Mortified Nation shows at the Joyo Theater in Lincoln. Watch people from across the nation share childhood art or read from their diaries and letters about some of their most embarrassing coming-of-age moments. Recommended for those over 18, that is also tonight at 7 p.m. And bilingual children's book author Carmen Lomas Garza will give a talk titled A Piece of My Heart. That's in Lincoln, Thursday, April 3rd at 5:30 p.m. She also has a painting on exhibit at the Sheldon Museum of Art, where she will give her talk. For information about these and other events, visit our website, netnebraska.org/radio. Nebraska's Best in the Arts were honored earlier this week by Governor Dave Heineman. From KVNO, Bill Grennan reports.
This past Tuesday, the Nebraska Arts Council gave out its biannual honors, the Governor's Arts Awards, recognizing organizations and individuals who have made major contributions to the state's cultural fabric. The awards this year were original works designed by Sydney, Nebraska landscape artist Benjamin Darling. The Emerging Leader Award, given out to an individual artist, arts administrator, or patron who has made a significant impact on the arts in Nebraska in a short period of time, was notable for the sheer amount of honors given. Nebraska Arts Council Executive Director Suzanne Wise spoke about the committee's process in choosing the honorees.
When we have the selection committee, we tell them, you know, we really like them to just do one, but if they... If they can't make up their minds and they think there are equally deserving people, to by all means do two awards. And as it turns out, we have four individuals.
Those individuals are Steve Barth and Brian Botsford of the Crane River Theater in Kearney, as well as Andrew Eck and Matt Mason of the Nebraska Writers Collective in Omaha. The Excellence in Art Education Award went to Patsy Coe Johns after teaching in the arts for over 40 years.
She is an educator that started her theater career in Cozad in terms of her teaching career, and then she ended up at Lincoln High School in Lincoln, where she retired just a couple of years ago. And since then, she's been very active with Nebraskans for the Arts.
Also given out was the Heritage Arts Award, given to Sioux Tribe member Steve Tamayo for exemplifying authenticity and excellence within a cultural tradition. Nebraska State Senator John Nelson received the Leonard Thiessen Award for typifying the highest degree of commitment to the arts in Nebraska. The Organizational Achievement Award was given to an arts organization that demonstrates achievements at a consistently high level of excellence in programming and outreach. It went to two organizations, the Lux Center for the Arts in Lincoln, as well as the Norfolk Arts Center. The Thomas C. Woods III Partner in Arts Award was a unanimous decision for the committee, and that honor went to Metropolitan Community College.
I think it's just the breadth and the depth of cultural activities that Metro offers. And I think it's just that huge commitment that they've made on a number of fronts that really impressed the committee.
The final honor of the evening was the Outstanding Artist Award. This year, the committee once again chose numerous individuals to receive the honor. The first honoree was Omaha Symphony Music Director Thomas Wilkins.
We are just so blessed to have him in this community and to have him bring his dynamic vision to the Omaha Symphony.
And the other awards went to retiring Playhouse directors Carl Beck and Susie Bear Collins.
It's really in recognition of their many years of artistic excellence at the Playhouse.
Wise said the awards recipients reflect the people that give Nebraska such a high quality of life with their continued dedication to the arts. For Friday Live, I'm Bill Grennan.
Support for programming comes from the Burkholder Project, celebrating 25 years of artists' works. Artists in residence with Open Door Studios at 719 P Street in Lincoln. Burkholderproject.com.
I'm Genevieve Randall. This is Friday Live, coming to you from the Mill Coffee and Tea in downtown Lincoln. Still ahead, a crane's story in Nebraska from puppeteer Heather Henson and pianist Paul Barnes presents Music About Music. My next guest is cellist with the Rangbrook Ensemble based in Omaha. Sophia Potter will be heading out on the road with her cello. Her tour is called Little Cellist on the Prairie. Sophia, great to see you.
It's wonderful to be back. Thank you.
Thanks, Sophia. Now, you kick off your tour with two free concerts, one tonight in Omaha and tomorrow night as well in Benson. Where and when?
Tonight I will be at Tri Point Coffee House in Papillion, Nebraska. So anyone who's kind of down south or coming up from Lincoln, I'll be right off the interstate. And then that performance will be at 7:30 p.m. Totally free. And then tomorrow night, Saturday the 29th, at 7 p.m. I will be at the 402 Arts Collective in Benson, right in that great Benson neighborhood with all those awesome live music venues.
Very nice. And then so that's your kickoff. Where does your tour head after that?
I've got a little time to myself on Sunday, but then on Monday, bright and early, I head out to Columbus, Nebraska to play for several schools there. And on Tuesday, April 1st, I will be in Norfolk, Nebraska in the evening at Northeast Community College in the Cox Center, playing a free concert at 7 p.m. for the community. And that concert will have similar programming to the kickoff concert. I'm really excited to be able to get out there and play for the community up there in Norfolk. And then from there, I will head to Ainsworth, Valentine, and then down to Stapleton, and then I'm going to drive myself on back home.
You're going to put some miles on it.
Yes, lots of miles.
You're playing for students, right?
Yes, for the most part. This is primarily an educational outreach in public schools, so I'm going to be playing ages from basically kindergarten up through senior high.
And what kinds of music are you playing?
I'm doing a pretty wide variety. I'm playing some Bach, one of his C major cello suite, some selections from that for the students. And then along with that, I'm also doing a couple pieces by Mark Summer from the Turtle Island String Quartet. Has a piece called Julio for solo cello and another piece that's a theme and variations on Lo, How a Rose Air Blooming. Those are two great pieces. I've had great reception from kids with those. And then I'll also be playing a couple of the movements from Bright Shang's Seven Tunes Heard in China based on traditional Chinese folk songs.
So what do you hope comes out of this tour? When these kids are watching you play, what do you hope that they're getting out of it?
What I'm hoping to do, and the reason that I chose the programming that I did, is to really show kids and the community, for that matter, that classical music is something that's alive and vibrant, and it's not just what a lot of people have preconceived notions about. It doesn't have to be stuffy. It can be fun and jazzy and exciting. And I'm also hoping that this will be an opportunity for education for the whole community, especially for communities out in that area that don't necessarily have regular access to a symphony or professional classical music.
And there's such a wide variety in that programming, too. I think that's another thing, is there's a variety in classical music.
Yes. And that's been a great thing for me to explore just by myself, too.
When you were a kid, did you see professional musicians at your schools performing?
You know, I did occasionally. And I know that, well, I came out through the Lincoln Public Schools, but and they take us to Lincoln Symphony concerts. But most of my exposure came from my parents, actually. I was very lucky to have that access to live professional classical music because my parents cared about it. So that's one of the reasons why I'm also going into these communities and trying to not just play for the schools, but also for everyone, because, you know, kids can be into classical music and love it all they want, but if mom and dad won't drive them to a concert or buy them that Yo-Yo Ma CD, then there's no hope.
Sophia Potter has studied and played her cello in such far-flung locations as Brevard, North Carolina, and New York City. Her tour of schools in Columbus, Ainsworth, Valentine, and Stapleton, Nebraska kicks off with performances in Omaha and Benson at 7:30 tonight in Omaha at the Tri Point Coffee House. Sophia, thanks so much for being here, and have a great tour.
Thank you so much.
She'll be also playing at 7 p.m. at the Cox Activity Center Theater in Norfolk. That's on Tuesday, April 1st. Still to come here on Friday Live, a class of students learns about torch songs and then performs them in Lincoln. Pianist Paul Barnes presents a concert called Homage, and the amazingly versatile clarinetist David Krakauer will be performing in Lincoln. All that is still ahead here on NET Radio's Friday Live. This is Friday Live on NET Radio. I'm Genevieve Randall. As the Sandhills cranes make their way through central Nebraska, feeding and storing up energy along the Platte River, several events are being held to celebrate the migration. One event takes place tomorrow night at the Merriman Center in Kearney, featuring Heather Henson, specializing in non-traditional storytelling, and happens to be the daughter of the late Jim Henson of Muppets fame. Heather, great to talk with you.
Thank you for letting me be here.
The performance is called Flight, A Crane's Story in Nebraska. What's the story?
This is a story of a little crane that needs to learn how to migrate on its own. So it's a little crane that's born up in Wood Buffalo, Canada. Its parents have gone away, and then it has to figure out how to migrate on its own. So it listens to the seasons changing and the buffalo marching and the different animals around him, and then he realizes he has to fly south, and so he flies down, gets caught in a storm, and then finds his way actually to Nebraska, where he finds all the cranes are gathered, and then that's when he finds his parents again, and then they continue down all the way down to Texas.
How did you come to create a piece about the cranes?
So I've done various shows about whooping cranes in different versions. Crane stories are great. They're huge, majestic birds. They fly these really long distances. And in this particular case, the whooping crane, they've become so endangered. And their numbers were such a small amount, and then they've risen. They're still very endangered, but their numbers have really come back quite strong. Humans have had a lot to do with bringing those numbers back, so I find it's a very inspiring story of humans making a huge effort to try and help out these birds.
Now, I watched a trailer for the show. It just looks like an amazing combination of puppetry, dance, lighting effects. Who is in the team, and who is the cast that we'll see on stage?
The performers, we've got dancers, kite flyers, and puppeteers in our cast. It's a really nice, fun combination of talents that come together in this show.
How do you fly a kite inside a theater?
Well, there is this art form of indoor kite flying. You can make them out of lighter weight material. Well, some of them are easier to fly. Like, some are just on poles. You are creating your own wind by your own movement on stage.
Your company is called Ibex Puppetry, and on the website it says, health and healing for the planet through artistic spectacle and the fine art of puppetry. Can you explain how we get health and healing through the work that Ibex does?
I guess I'm trying to use these shows to bring about a global consciousness of the earth and the fragileness of the earth and the importance of all of the natural elements of the earth. So in this show, we're telling the story about the crane, but we also want to let the audience know that you know, the earth is this big, living, breathing, moving, alive entity that functions in this harmonious, interconnected way, and that we are a part of that web of life. Actually, in our show, we often try to put like a piece of interactivity into the show or a piece of an element where people are kind of our own participation in the show, you know, is a part of the show. And in this case, we make little cranes. And so we are a part of the flock of cranes that are flying in one particular scene. These are shows to kind of honor the earth and honor the elements of the earth. I mean, in this case, it has a lot to do with the landscape that these birds need, the wetlands, the rivers, the clean rivers. And that's a part of these shows. It's kind of educational. We're demonstrating it and then hoping the audience absorbs it through these dances.
Now, I don't want to assume that growing up with the creator of the Muppets dictated your current career, but I can't help but think that maybe your childhood gave you some unique perspective or experience on how to tell a story.
Well, I got to grow up with my dad going onto the sets of Sesame Street and the Muppet Show and Fraggle Rock. And some particular things that were very important to me was seeing the sets of these large teams of people that my dad would put together on movies. Particularly, like, being on the set of Labyrinth was very important to me at a perfect age. I think I was 13 years old during Labyrinth.
Cool.
And seeing the way that, you know, all these amazing artists could come together. He had an amazing ability to work with different talents of people. I don't know if I've learned that. I mean, it's still a struggle kind of putting art pieces together and combinations of people, but that gets me very, very excited. And so even in these kind of things, pulling together amazing fabric artists and kite flyers and musicians, the music's really important in this show. Weaving all these elements together into one piece is really fun. I think I probably got that bug of multimedia team building from my dad.
Heather Henson is the founder and director of Ibex Puppetry. Her multifaceted show, Flight, A Crane's Story in Nebraska, features dancers, kites, puppetry, and more, and is showing at the Merriman Center in Kearney tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. Heather, a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you very much. It's been great talking to you, too.
You can link to ticket information through the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org/radio. Theory and Games on Bach, music by Lincoln Hanks. Improvisations based on the music of Bach. We heard Paul Barnes performing, and he is my next guest here on Friday Live. He'll be presenting a program of music about music.
Exactly.
I'll let him explain a little bit more about that. Paul Barnes, good morning. Nice
Great.
To
Great. It's here. Wonderful to be here. Yeah, this new program is entitled Homage. It is primarily to pay homage to the woman that endowed my recently awarded professorship, Marguerite Scribanti, and our director of the Glencore School of Music, John Richmond, and I were privileged to visit her several weeks ago in Naples, Florida, and I got to play for her as well. And so I'll be doing this on Thursday, and also for those that can't make it on Thursday, you can come to see me in New York City on Saturday, where I'll be playing at Lincoln Center, the same program. And what's interesting about Lincoln's piece, all of the music on the program is based on or inspired by other composers or music. And so this is obviously in the opening Bach section. And when Lincoln wrote this piece, and this is a piece, movement from a complete work called Monstro Sacra, which means holy terror. And I premiered that in New York a couple of years ago, played it last year on one of my recitals, and loved this Bach movement so much. And it basically answers a musical question. What would happen if Glenn Gould was a guest at your party and you told him to sit down and improvise? And that's what might come out.
We were just saying before the interview, before we came on mic, that I recognized some of those from the film about Glenn.
There's three direct quotes from Bach. So if you know your Bach, and I'm not going to give away, but you'll get it. I'll give you a free CD if you can name the Bach themes on my recital on Thursday.
There you go. A little temptation there. So now, when composers want to pay homage to another composer, there's several different paths they could choose, right? There's transcription. There's improvisation on a theme like we just talked about.
Yep.
What's on balance here in your program?
Well, the program is in multiple sections. One, the very first section is homage to Bach, and then there's an homage to chant. And as you know, I love my chant. So I'll be chanting a Greek communion hymn, Poterion Soteriou, and then performing Victoria Bond's work that she wrote based on that. And there will be audience participation for this. I'm going to need the audience's help for the drone. And then there's a Chopin section where there are two works from composers, Jackson Berkey, you know, from Omaha, very good friend of mine, and then also Ivan Moody, whose quintet I premiered with the Chiara Quartet a couple of years ago in New York. And he wrote this beautiful piece while he was ill and convalescing in Finland. He wrote a piece called Fioriture, which means ornaments, and it's based on the beautiful ornaments that you find in Chopin's nocturnes. And so I'm playing my favorite Chopin nocturne along with those two works.
Tell me a little bit more about Victoria Bond and her composition. And
oh, sure, sure. Well, my very, very first CD that I made was recording, funded by the School of Music here in Nebraska. I did this right when I came here, was her first piano concerto. And during the recording process, which took place in the Czech Republic, she knew that I was this Greek Orthodox chanter, this whole other life that I lived. And so I sang this hymn for her. She said, just sing anything. So I just sang the first thing that came to mind. And she absolutely fell in love with the chant. So she wrote this theme and variations on the chant, and then got this wonderful grant to live in Brahms's house, and converted the piano piece into a concerto, which I've also recorded. So, and she lives in New York. I practice at her place in the West Village. I'll be there Friday practicing for my Saturday recital in New York as well.
Now, there's also a piece by Joan Tower on the program titled Homage to Beethoven. Are there direct quotes in that piece?
There are. Now, this, Joan, this was the very first concerto that I had recorded. It's on that same CD that when I recorded Victoria's concerto. And I've been in love with this piece for 20 years. And yes, it has three direct quotes. Well, two direct quotes and one implied quote from three of my favorite Beethoven sonatas. So the Opus 31, number 2, the Tempest, the Waldstein, and then Opus 111. And the way that she uses it, it's really quite stunning. And this is the world premiere of my solo transcription of the concerto. I did this because Joan turned 75, and I wanted to give her a birthday present. So she's going to be at the New York performance on Saturday, and this will be her official 75th birthday present.
So you are paying your own homage.
Exactly. But it's a really, Joan's music is characterized by this incredibly innate, organic sense of rhythmic drive, and I've just always loved her music. And the piece revolves around these two huge solo cadenzas, so I figured, oh my gosh, this would work so great as a solo piece, and I wanted to be able to play it on my solo recitals. So just like I did with Philip Glass's Concerto No. 2, if you transcribe it for a solo piano, you get to play it a lot more often.
Paul Barnes is Marguerite Scribante, Professor of Music at the UNL Glencorf School of Music. His program Homage will be presented in Lincoln at Kimball Recital Hall on Thursday, April 3rd at 7:30 p.m. Paul, thank you.
My pleasure.
Still to come, a class performs torch songs under the tutelage of jazz singer Jackie Allen. Find out more about all of the events that you hear about on the show at our website, netnebraska.org/radio. This is Friday Live on NET Radio. I'm Genevieve Randall. Fans of klezmer music will know the name David Krakauer. A clarinet player who has played with his band Klezmer Madness, appeared with the Klezmatics, and is equally skilled at classical and jazz music. His latest project will be presented on the Lead Center stage in Lincoln on Saturday night. That's tomorrow night, 7:30 p.m., and he's my next guest. David Krakauer, great to talk with you.
Great to talk with you, too.
As I was reading about you, I kept seeing this word used to describe your performances, and that word was visceral. Why do you think that is?
I go for very raw emotions in my music and in my playing. Some of my big influences are some of the great jazz musicians like Sidney Bechet and Louis Armstrong and John Coltrane and Coleman Hawkins. And what I always admired about their playing was this tremendous emotional rawness and ability to communicate, that very, very direct quality. When I got into klezmer in my early 30s, I heard that in the old klezmer records of the 1920s that I started listening to.
Can you talk a little bit about what distinguishes klezmer music?
Well, klezmer music, by definition, is Eastern European Jewish celebration music, and it's music that came to the United States in the great wave of immigration between about 1880 and 1920. And these were Eastern European Yiddish-speaking Jews, Ashkenazic Jews, who came over to the United States. My grandmother came from a very small town in Belarus, and I think she arrived in New York for a little while as a teenager, and then her father was called to Lincoln, Nebraska, to work in the synagogue there. And so the whole family moved to Lincoln for several years. And I still remember, even in my early childhood, that we still had some relatives in Lincoln. So that was pretty amazing.
Oh, when you were growing up, was your family musical?
My late mother was a violinist, a concert violinist, teacher, and performer. And my dad, who's still alive, loves music as an amateur singer. The family, there was always music and a big emphasis on theater and the arts in general growing up.
Now, while you're in Lincoln, you're also going to be doing a workshop, is that correct?
Yes, I'll be working with Professor Diane Barger's students over at the university, doing a clarinet masterclass the morning before our performance.
Now, the concert tomorrow night is with your newest project, Ancestral Groove, and with a DJ, I see. What is it that audience members will see and hear?
Ancestral Groove is kind of in the vein of my former name of my band, Klezmer Madness, but there's no accordion in the band. It's electric guitar, electric bass, drums, and sampler. And so it has a, let's say, more modern sound, less folky sound, but there's still that flavor, obviously, that drive of Klezmer. And sometimes we even go into two or three traditional Klezmer songs, but done in our own way. The whole project for me is about a journey in search of my identity. When I was about 30 years old, I got into Klezmer. I had played jazz as a teenager, then abandoned jazz in my early 20s. And then, so I pursued a career in classical music. When I was in my early 30s, I felt like I had thrown the baby out with the bathwater. I missed jazz. I wanted to improvise again. And I formed Klezmer Madness. I made two records for John Zorn's Tzadik label. And then in the late 90s, I arrived in France, and my career caught on like crazy in France, and I made four records for the label Label Bleu. This has been just an amazing ride for me, and I think a kind of what I'd call a Jewish journey, discovering about myself, discovering about my roots, and I think that this is a quest that every person is on to find out who they are. Yes, this is how I make my living, but it's way beyond that for me. It's a real quest for my identity, to find out more about my identity.
You know, David, I'm wondering, listening to the different kinds of music that you've been involved in, obviously connected to your own Jewish background and that culture, but mixing that music with jazz or hip-hop or funk or having a classical background, are there commonalities that you've discovered between different types of music?
One has to say that when you start to explore mixing different kinds of music, it's really commonalities between cultures and our basic humanness. And I think it's a question of being open. So we're mixing these things together, but they make sense. When we brought Fred Wesley on board, you know, he said, "Oh well, funk is the root of hip hop." And so-called is mixing hip-hop with klezmer, which seemed logical enough. You know, it's just giving a different kind of a beat to this music and then adapting the music and shaping it and recreating it so it fits with the beat. So you kind of have these mutations coming on both sides. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, there are a lot of purists out there that go, oh, this isn't klezmer, this isn't hip-hop, this isn't funk or whatever. But then at the end of the day, people come to the concert and they enjoy the music or not. And that's the acid test.
Clarinetist David Krakauer has been reinventing music for 20 years. His Klezmer Fusion Ensemble Ancestral Groove will perform at the Lead Center in Lincoln tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m. David, thank you.
Thank you so much.
You can link to more information about tomorrow night's performance and all the events you hear about on Friday Live by going to the Friday Live page at our website, netnebraska.org/radio. Jackie Allen is a jazz vocalist, composer, and educator who has released recordings on labels such as Blue Note and Naxos. She recently was featured on A Prairie Home Companion with Garrison Keillor, trying to give him some pointers on how to sing. And that's because she also teaches a unique class called Torch Singer 101. She's here along with one of her students, Sue Nelson. Welcome to both of you.
It's great Thank to you. Be here, Genevieve.
Nice to be here.
Thanks for being on the show. Jackie, how did you get into teaching this class?
Oh, good question. Well, I've been teaching for many years, but when I was up in Chicago, I remember seeing an article that talked about top fantasy occupations for both men and women, and I was intrigued. So I read down, and for men, this is all I recall at the time, but for men, the top three were airline, like a pilot, which I can imagine, you know, so many boys say that, and another one was a professional baseball player. And in the women's, the only one I remember, because it was number one, it was lounge singer.
Mm.
And I thought, this is what I do. You know, and I'd already been teaching a lot at, you know, college level and, you know, and community level. And I thought, I need to come up with a course that's for adults, that is a beginner course, so they can fulfill this, if it's a bucket list or a longtime fantasy, that, you know, this is something they can do, and I can get them to that place in maybe just, you know, like 6 weeks. So that's where it came from.
I love it. Now, Sue, you're one of the students in this class. Are you a musician?
I'm not a musician. I did take piano lessons as a child. Didn't practice as much as I should have. Didn't stick with it as long as I should have. Mm-hmm. But I know music. I know how to read music. But I did sing when I was younger. And so haven't been doing very much of that recently, and decided I wanted to get back my groove.
And is that why you took the class? What prompted you to first take it?
Well, the reason I heard about it was because of my friend Sue Hedrick, who was a torch singer a few sessions back, and my boyfriend Dave said, let's go listen to Sue, and it just planted the seed.
So what do you think you learned from the class?
First off, it's the relationships. I love Jackie. I love the people that I've met. So you learn about people. I learn about myself. And I learn that I can't take myself too seriously. I learn that I don't have to be a perfectionist and so technical about it. But it's all about self-expression. It's all about getting up there, having a good time. All of us are amateurs. And all of us are just living a dream, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Is there, Genevieve, something you'd like to share about this, that you have some other special relationship to this?
Well, I am actually taking the class, too. We will admit.
Yes.
Right now.
Can you share your experience?
You know, you turned the table on me here, Jackie.
Yes.
I know. It's funny. It really is. I am a musician. I do have a
music
background.
Yes, you are a professional musician.
But I will say this, that I think, and a number of students in the class have said this, that it's not a requirement to have a music background, per se, and everything that you do is different. For example, performing on my flute, I was not nervous for years, and when I first started radio, yes, I was nervous, but now I'm not. Then speaking in public, I was nervous, which is a whole nother, it's just a different thing.
Right.
And now doing this, it's another way of facing one's fears, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a new
fun.
Experience.
It's a fun way of doing it. Mm-hmm. Jackie, there's so many different people that have taken this
this class. What are some of the wide, far-reaching backgrounds that people come from to take this class?
I have had some people that taught music history at the college level. I've had people that have never sang in a choir, never had anything, and I almost wonder what drew you to this. But I've had a number of people said that, you know, this is on my bucket list. I've had which was some of the most fun students were. I've had a couple that were in their 70s and 80s that took it. So some of the songs they were singing were songs that they grew up with, and they had this insight. So they knew some of these songs from the 30s and 40s as kids, as popular music, like we call the Beatles or something like that. So they had this wonderful insight that they gave the rest of the class, and their phrasing, their music, you know, their sense of music was just lovely. So and it's great to have the different age groups, because we've had people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s all together in the class, and they feed each other. It's a really fun group that way.
Now, the performance is Monday evening.
Yes.
At 7:30 p.m. at Zen's Lounge.
That's
how
correct.
Many students are performing?
There'll be seven students.
Seven students. Sue, what are the two songs that you're singing?
I am singing Can't Help Loving That Man of Mine, and You Are the Sunshine of My Life.
Oh, Stevie Wonder. Wild. Nice, wide variety,
yes,
you know?
Yes, it is. It is.
Right and left.
I am also singing a song from 1948, which is called No Orchids for My Lady, and then a more modern song. So again, a Bonnie Raitt song, I Can't Make You Love Me. So...
fun, and I love that Bonnie Raitt tune.
Sue Nelson is one of the seven students, along with myself, performing Monday evening as part of the Torch Singer 101 class. Jackie Allen is the teacher. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
My pleasure.
Thanks. Coming up on NET Radio, classical music on Morning Concert, and this afternoon, Laura Black with Classics by Request. Be sure to visit our website for podcasts of the show at netnebraska.org/radio. Thanks to everyone who makes Friday Live possible, including Fuse Co-working for providing our Wi-Fi hookup, and associate producer Dave Hughes. I'm Genevieve Randall.